Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Joe, what was your favorite dinosaur when you were a child?
That is an impossible question to answer. Impossible. You know, I think my favorite was actually the fake velociraptors from Jurassic Park, which are, you know, the velociraptors in Jurassic Park are not really much like real velociraptors. They're more
for a number of reasons.
Yes. They're probably closer to the dinosaur Deinonychus, right? But I was really into them. As far as real dinosaurs go, you know, your Triceratops is a fan favorite. It seems kind of like the workhorse protagonist of your dinosaur paleo art scene where you've got a predator attacking and a Triceratops defending and volcanoes erupting in the background. So it always made the Triceratops look like the good guy, like the good one, while there was a ferocious Tyrannosaur. It's also, I don't know, predators are fun. It's hard to turn down a Tyrannosaur.
Well, I like your point about it being impossible to pick a favorite because ultimately – for a child, dinosaurs are less a roster of prehistoric creatures or a tree of prehistoric creatures. They're more a pantheon. Mm-hmm. You know, they have different energies to them. They have different roles. And you have to sort of love them all because they all embody this sort of wild nature that I think the child, more than any of us, certainly more, I mean, more than us adults, is in touch with.
Well, yeah, they do have a character. Like I was saying, the Triceratops very much has this kind of straightforward, good-hearted, working-class hero kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And the Deinonychus or the Velociraptor, they're kind of sneaky, aren't they?
Then how would you classify the star of today's episode, the mighty Stegosaurus?
Good-natured, dim-witted sidekick.
From sidekick?
Yeah, okay. You know, sidekick, not psychic.
Okay.
But sidekick. No, like the character – this has got to be an archetype in some movies. Like the character who's on the good side, who's friends with the protagonist, who's maybe not too bright and like has some malapropisms.
Hmm. Okay. But I could also easily see the Stegosaurus taking the central dim-witted strong hero role of, say, a Hercules or a Samson.
A Conan,
yeah.
Oh, I've never thought about it that way. But the tiny-headed Stegosaurus – very much could be the Conan the Barbarian of the prehistoric world. You know, like, Crom, I've never prayed to you before. I have no tongue for it. But if you let me thagamize my enemies.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, he's got the armor, he's got the muscles, and he's got that awesome weapon that he swings around.
I want to run some 100% true dinosaur facts by you today, because we are going to be talking about some dinosaur pseudoscience.
Right. In the probably the second half of the episode, for sure.
Yeah. So these are all 100% true facts I'm about to state. It can be proved that dinosaurs are still alive today. They exist on every continent on the Earth. There are literally even millions of dinosaurs currently living in Antarctica. Thousands of people, or maybe millions of people for all I know, actually even keep dinosaurs as pets. You might not have ever known about this, but they keep dinosaurs as pets in cages, and sometimes they can even train these dinosaurs to speak modern languages and repeat phrases like, "Polly want a cracker."
Those statements, again, all 100% true. And certainly you can take them all in kind of a Dinotopia spirit, where we imagine this fantastic world full of Antarctic dinosaurs and pet velociraptors. But this is all a much more mundane fact of our reality.
Right. I'm actually being pedantic and obnoxious, because these are all true facts, because birds are dinosaurs. Modern birds are biologically considered dinosaurs in terms of phylogenetic analysis. Mm-hmm. So hate me if you want, but it's true. And because we're going to be talking about the concept of modern or recent dinosaurs today and some pseudoscientific beliefs associated with that, I have to say, as a precaution against getting a lot of potential pedantic emails, I'll go ahead and be pedantic for you. When we talk about dinosaurs in this episode, we're talking about the classic kind, the non-avian dinosaurs, the last of which went extinct at the end of the Cretaceous period about 66 million years ago. But modern-day birds are the descendants of the only dinosaurs that survived this horrible mass extinction, in which about three-quarters of Earth's plant and animal species suddenly disappeared. Those dinosaurs that survived became birds, and thus birds of today are dinosaurs.
Yeah, so when someone says, hey, I wonder what it would have been like if dinosaurs had survived in a modern times.
They did.
They did. Behold, here they are.
Dinosaurs poop on your car. It's just true. They build nests in your shed.
They fly into your Home Depot and eat birdseed out of the home and garden section.
Yeah, there's a dinosaur stuck in the Home Depot going back and forth between the aisles. My cat is out in the backyard hunting dinosaurs. And this is all fun to say for multiple reasons, mainly maybe because we all love us some Flintstones, right? Where humans and dinosaurs, they exist at the same time, and dinosaurs are brutally enslaved to serve as household appliances. So you've got a dinosaur garbage disposal. Is there a dinosaur TV? Do they just watch a dinosaur acting out TV shows or something?
I don't remember. I feel like they probably did have a TV, but I can't instantly picture it in my head.
I think even most elementary school children these days are aware that humans and dinosaurs, the non-avian dinosaurs, actually never existed at the same time. That's like something that was maybe a little bit blurrier when I was a kid, but mm-hmm. I think that's generally made clear to children today.
Yeah, my son has no doubt about it. I mean, part of it, I think, is because he watches a lot of Dinosaur Train. So it might be possible then that dinosaurs spoke and had a rail system that was able to travel back and forth in dinosaur history, but they certainly did not live alongside humans.
Right. So as we were just saying, the non-avian dinosaurs all went extinct before or during the Cretaceous-Paleogene extinction event, sometimes known as the KPG or the KT extinction, about 66 million years ago. And human beings have existed for far less than a million years. If you want to get more specific than that, there are actually some interesting questions there. Like, it can prove difficult to say exactly when Homo sapiens appeared because, of course, the transition from earlier species of bipedal hominids to the anatomically modern human didn't happen overnight. But our best guess is that Homo sapiens first emerged in Africa roughly 200,000 to 300,000 years ago, roughly. And that's a difference of about 65 million years or so. It's a big difference, right? It's not like you could fudge the numbers a little bit one way or another and say maybe there's a little bit of overlap. Like, it's a big enough difference that there's no way to do that.
Yeah.
Based on all the evidence available to us, there is pretty much zero chance of human interaction with non-avian dinosaurs. So what are we to make of stories and little bits of art and things like that that people sometimes present to say, no, you're wrong. Humans have seen living dinosaurs, and here's the proof.
Yeah, and as the title of this episode suggests, one bit of proof that we're discussing here today, but also using as just an excuse to talk about the Stegosaurus, is this idea that there is a 12th century carving in modern-day Cambodia of a Stegosaurus. Again, fossils of which were not officially discovered until 1877 during the so-called Bone Wars in North America. So that is the evidence that is presented. We're not buying it, but we will discuss it a little bit later in the show.
Right. So before we get to the 12th century Cambodian carving of a supposed Stegosaurus, we should look at the Stegosaurus itself, this powerful Conan of the prehistoric world, this fascinating old herbivore with its plates and its spikes and its tiny little head. I want to know all about it, Robert. Let's go in.
All right. Well, like I said earlier, Stegosaurus was certainly one of my favorites as a child. And my son, by the way, he likes the Stegosaurus, but he actually prefers the Kentrosaurus, which is a smaller contemporary from East Africa.
Oh, yeah. I believe, as far as I know, that's the only one that was ever found in Africa, right?
I believe so, yeah. So this one, if you're unfamiliar with what this specimen probably looked like, the illustrations and the fossil reconstructions tend to show it with typical bony plates roughly halfway down its back, and then it has spikes. So it looks like a cross between a proper Stegosaurus and a pincushion. But now I should say that even though the Kentrosaurus was smaller, it was still 16 feet or 5 meters long, which is still pretty enormous.
Yeah.
A proper Stegosaurus, Stegosaurus ungulatus, would have reached 30 feet or 9 meters in length and would have weighed somewhere in the neighborhood of 5.3 to 7 tons. So this was an herbivore, and it lived in what is now North America during the late Jurassic, so roughly 163 to 145 million years ago. Carnegie Quarry at the U.S. Dinosaur National Monument is one of the places where you'll find a wealth of Stegosaurus fossils. In fact, I was reading where one prominent paleontologist had even complained at one point that the Stegosaurus fossils were in the way of the sauropod fossils that he wanted to fully examine.
Oh, like, can we get somebody in here to sweep all these Stegosaurs out of the way?
Yeah, we just have nuisance Stegosauruses here.
So Stegosaurians were part of a branch of dinosaurs that were the Ornithischians, right? Now, what does that mean, Robert?
Bird-hip dinosaurs.
Bird-hip. So they're sometimes classified in terms of the orientations of their hip bones.
Right. Now, it does not mean slender hips or slender thighs exactly, because if you look at a Stegosaurus, its thighs are enormous. It has these enormous hind legs.
It's a meat on the bones.
Yes. Now, unlike their ornithopod relatives, such as iguanodons and the duck-billed dinosaurs, they couldn't run on their hind legs. Their hind legs were far larger than their front legs, meaning that these creatures actually sloped forward with their hips higher than the rest of their body.
It's kind of leaning down.
Yeah. Oh, and they also had tall spines at the base of the tail that probably helped anchor powerful muscles that helped it actually lift its forelegs up off the ground to aid in feeding. So while it couldn't run on its hind legs, it could probably lift itself up and pull some branches down, that sort of thing.
And those spikes on the back of the Stegosaurus tail have a special name, right?
Oh, yes. Well, now, this is an informal name, but it is informal even among paleontologists.
They'll use it.
Yes.
I've read that all paleontologists now call the spikes the
Thagomizer.
The Thagomizer.
Yeah, this is great because this is an ode to Gary Larson's Far Side cartoon, one in particular in which you had a number of cavemen or Neanderthals, the typical Gary Larson Far Side cavemen.
Always depicting dinosaurs and cave-dwelling humans alongside each other.
Right, and one is giving a presentation on the hindquarters of a Stegosaurus, and he's saying, now this end is called the Thagomizer after the late Thag Simmons. And so now we call it the Thagomizer, which feels appropriate because it looks like an instrument for thagomizing something.
The word Thagomizer even fits so well with our Conan motif. You can imagine Conan saying it.
Yeah, and again, you can also imagine Conan wearing some heavy armor into battle as well.
Right.
At least, not so much that he covers all of the muscles, but, just to strengthen him up a little bit.
Okay.
And indeed, the Stegosaurus did have these very fascinating plates on its body.
Right. And there's actually some interesting debate over what role those plates played.
Right. Yeah. Because when you one of the things about the Stegosaurus is you look at it and even if it's an action bit of paleo art, you know, there's some sort of a battle going on, it is hard to really nail down what the plates are supposed to be doing.
Right. I mean, the easy thing to say, which you've seen a stegosaur, it's got these plates poking up off of its back.
Mm-hmm.
You could say, well, of course, they're armor. They're for protection. And there's no way to rule out that they might have played some role along those lines. But also, I mean, imagine a person running into battle with, like, sheets of steel sticking straight out from behind their back.
Right.
You mean, generally, you'd want the plates more oriented along the surfaces of the skin to protect from attacks, right?
Yeah. I mean, these things were big. They were kind of arrowhead-shaped, were more than 2 feet or 60 centimeters high. And one of the reasons there's such confusion, even just about the placement of the plates, is that we have many well-preserved specimens of the Stegosaurus, but there's never been one where the plates are still attached to the skeleton. So there's been a lot of discussion over how they might be arranged. So the vertical arrangement tends to be the one that you see, the one that is accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, it's uncertain if we're looking at two parallel rows of these, or if there's a zigzagging pattern down the creature's spine.
I think the one-layered zigzag is the favored today.
Is it now?
Yeah,
okay.
I think.
Now, there were paleontologists that argued that they were actually in or on the skin, more like armor plating. But again, the popular theory now is that it's a vertical arrangement. But if they were to just be purely body armor, it would seem to make more sense, at least to our human minds, that they would be laid across its back like plate mail.
Yeah, cover more of the body.
Yeah. So they were likely covered in tough horn, but some paleontologists have theorized that you would have a layer of thin skin that could have covered them as well,
mm-hmm.
and this would have allowed the plates to serve as heat exchangers. And then there are others who have theorized that it might have been brightly colored and used for mating purposes. There's actually a cool, fairly recent study to back this up. A 2015 Princeton study argued that Stegosaurus miotsi actually featured differing male and female plate arrangements.
Hmm.
And this would certainly back up the mating theory and also provide some different interpretations of just Stegosaurian plating in general. They also argued that this sort of sexual dimorphism could be widespread among non-avian dinos. I mean, it's possible that all three of these different theories are somehow involved, but one can imagine a scenario where some sort of what was originally armor plating becomes increasingly involved in mate selection and does just get out of control. So they're sticking up, they're less protective, they're brightly colored, and then, you know, millions and millions of years later, a new species of super intelligent apes just has a hard time figuring out what it was all about. Now, when it comes to the tail of the Stegosaurus,
right,
there's a lot less doubt about what it was for.
Yeah, it seems pretty clear that it was used for defense, right?
Yeah, everyone's pretty certain that these were used just like the sort of medieval Morning Star weapon that it resembles, that the Stegosaurus would have swung this thing around in battle to protect itself from carnivores. And one of the cool things is that we actually have some fossil evidence of spike wounds on Allosauruses to back this up.
Exactly. So the Allosaurus was a predator that would have been around to prey on the Stegosaurus.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2014, there emerged a really awesome, fantastic example of this. So in 2014, the famous paleontologist Robert Bakker, who, if you'll recall, he actually gets a name drop in Jurassic Park. You remember that?
No, I don't.
Tim, who's following around Alan Grant, he's like, I read this other book by this guy named Bakker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's him. Spells his name like R. Scott Baker, but Robert Bakker.
Gotcha.
So he announced a discovery in 2014 at the Geological Society of America that the fossil remains of an Allosaurus, this predator, in a Wyoming museum showed signs of having been killed in combat with the Stegosaurus, specifically being spiked to death in the groin.
Oh, man.
Crotch thagomized to death.
There you go. That, if that's not some Conan the Barbarian behavior, I don't know what is.
I know. So what's the evidence of this, right? The Allosaurus skeleton has this deep conical hole punctured right in its pubic bone. Can you imagine how strong a blow would have to be to punch a hole right through the bones of a massive prehistoric predator?
Wow. Yeah, that's some serious punch.
Yeah. So apparently this wound would have left shattered bone fragments and all kinds of dirt and contaminants in a deep wound like this. And then it appears what happened is the wound got infected. So Bakker says, quote, "A massive infection ate away a baseball-sized sector of the bone. Probably this infection spread upwards into the soft tissue attached here, the thigh muscles and adjacent intestines and reproductive organs."
Oh, man.
And the wound, they are sure that it killed the allosaur because the wound doesn't show any signs of having healed over, which is usually a sign that the animal died from the wound or maybe just coincidentally died right after receiving it. But it probably died from this horrible wound, right? So Bakker's talking about the specific weaponized qualities of the thagomizer and the stegosaurus tail in general. And he says, quote, "Most dinosaur tails get stiffer toward the end, but the joints of a stegosaur tail look like a monkey's tail.
Hmm.
They were built for three-dimensional combat." And the way I've seen this explained was that Bakker's team says we often think about the combat behaviors of stegosaurs as in like they can just sort of wave their tail back and forth like we see in cartoons, right?
Right.
I mean, they probably would have been able to wave their tail back and forth. But Bakker and colleagues instead argued that the stegosaur was not limited to this motion but could make these powerful stabbing thrusts with its tail like we would with a spear or a sword.
Oh, I love this. So it's not just this idea that it just has to wave it back and forth and it's just kind of a general don't approach me from the rear because there are spikes back there. But it's more of a strategic weapon that it can use against the offender.
Yeah, it's almost like a spiked arm. Like it's got three dimensions of freedom of movement, right? So if it gets snuck up on by an Allosaurus, Allosaurus runs up on the Stegosaur from behind the Stegosaur, it's not like has its tail pinned down now. It can go up and stab the Allosaur in the groin. And that's what happened here.
I like how Bakker reminds us that the Stegosaurus would not have kept its thagomizer in sterile conditions.
Right.
And it also kind of makes me think, oh, what if it was quite the opposite? What if this thing was just nasty? It just dragged its thagomizer through its own excrement. So it was just this sharp, brutal, feces-encrusted instrument of death that it would weave back and forth at its enemies.
Gross.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great. That would have been a really devious weapon. I don't know if you could have really – I mean, when you think about it, could they have had a selection pressure for that if, like, it wouldn't immediately kill the Allosaur that's attacking it but would kill it, like, within a few days from infection? I don't know.
And I mean, to his actual point, though, you would not have to have a feces-encrusted thagomizer to result in catastrophic infection.
Exactly. Yeah. No, yeah. You'd stab a hole through the bones, leave a bunch of fragments, you get some dirt in there, yeah. So in any case, even if it doesn't immediately kill the Allosaurus, it's going to wound it bad enough that the Stegosaurus is probably going to be able to get away, right?
Yeah. Oh, interesting side note. If you look at older illustrations of the Stegosaurus, there'll often be extra spikes on the thagomizer.
Oh, yeah.
Now everyone tends to agree you're looking at four spikes, but you see older paintings where they have eight.
Yeah, and in that paleo art, you also see the parallel arrangement of the vertical plates on the back instead of the single line arrangement. Another side note about this find with the groin stab from the thagomizer. It also affects an interesting debate over the basic survival niche of theropod carnivores like Allosaurus. So you've got the theropods, you know, the Tyrannosaurus-type dinosaurs, the two-legged walking dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
These theropod predators, some have proposed that Allosaurus and Tyrannosaurus were actually scavengers primarily rather than active hunters. And this wound and others like it inflicted by herbivores on carnivores seems to me to be pretty good evidence that large theropod carnivores like Allosaurus were active hunters, right?
Yeah, because why else are you going to thagomize somebody?
Right. There would be no reason for a Stegosaurus to jab an Allosaurus to death unless the Allosaurus was attacking it.
Yeah, Stegosaurus is not going to walk up and be like, stop disrespecting the dead.
Yeah.
Because the Stegosaurus doesn't think like that.
Right.
And speaking of thinking, the Stegosaurus had an extremely small head.
Yep.
A mere 16 inches or 40 centimeters long. The brain, it's often pointed out, would have been roughly the size of a walnut.
I like this, but I also like, because that's an often cited fact, the paleontologist Kenneth Carpenter, who's director of the USU Eastern Prehistoric Museum in Utah, has said that despite the common comparison of the Stegosaurus brain to the walnut, he makes an even more specific comparison, which is to say, quote, actually, its brain had the size and shape of a bent hot dog.
I really like this interpretation because it kind of implies that all the Stegosaurians were deviants, you know? They had a real bent hot dog of a brain.
All right, I think we should explore some facts and some controversies about that bent hot dog when we come back from a break.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
All right, we're back. So we were talking about the particularly low brain-to-body ratio that you would have found in the Stegosaurians.
Right. It's a Crom worshiper. It's got a big weapon. It's got a tiny little head and a tiny, tiny little brain, often compared to a walnut, sort of like a bent hot dog, in the words of one paleontologist. Why so small, though?
Well, ultimately, if you're a walking tank, if you're a walking Jurassic tank, how much thinking do you need to do, right? You're essentially a grazing herbivore.
Mm-hmm.
If something attacks you, you fight back viciously with your Thagomizer, but you're not engaging in probably a lot of rich social behavior. You're not doing any pack hunting or anything of that nature. You're not, you don't have a diverse diet that you're having to deal with. So a lot of the behavioral reasons that you would have a more highly evolved brain are just not present in the Stegosaurus.
Mm-hmm. I know some people throughout history, and we'll present counters to this in a minute, but some people throughout history have looked at the tiny brain and said, wow, that's so small. How could it even control its body, right? Would that even have enough processing power to move its body parts around?
Yeah, well, this we get into an interesting theory that I understand it is less popular now. But the idea was that, well, the Stegosaurus had a second brain in its hips to control the movements of its hindquarters, sort of like a rear steering wheel in a fire truck.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Now, of course, nobody was arguing that this would have been a true brain, but rather a cluster of nervous tissue. The idea of, say, a neural canal in the sacrum, and it just would have been a lot larger in the Stegosaurus because the Stegosaurus has such large hindquarters.
Yeah, a lot of bones, a lot of space between the bones, a lot of meat on the bones.
Right.
So there's a lot of So as beautiful as the Stegosaur butt brain idea is, because it would be kind of beautiful to find a creature with a brain in its butt, unfortunately, it looks like the evidence did not pan out for the butt brain theory, and it's not accepted anymore. This hypothesis first came from the 19th century paleontologist Othniel Charles Marsh, who wrote in 1881 that the cavity for the expansion of the neural canal, which is what you were just mentioning, was a, quote, posterior brain case. And that's also a good insult to keep in your bank, you know.
Posterior brain case. I like that, it.
We're getting them all. So it's like you call somebody a bent hot dog brain, you call somebody a posterior brain case. But paleontologists do not believe this anymore, mainly because there's no evidence for it. And in fact, there's a pretty good reason for thinking that this cavity was for something else. And I found a good, clear explanation of this in a blog post by a Western U paleontologist named Matt Waddell that clearly explains what's going on here. And funny enough, as a side note, in the context of him mentioning this was complaining about being featured in a wildly inaccurate Science Channel documentary in 2009.
Oh, I wonder what it was. What is it, like Stegosaurians Walk Among Us?
I don't remember the name of it, but he's talking about how he claims that it misleadingly cut his interview to make it seem like he was advocating this outdated brain-butt hypothesis, and he wasn't. So instead he writes that there were actually two different things in the body of a stegosaur that get referred to as the sacrolumbar expansion, this cavity you're talking about. One is a swelling of the spinal cord around the pelvis, which is actually present in most vertebrates and is apparently there to control motor function, right? One of the weird things that a lot of people don't know is that it is thought that much of your body's motor function, like the less executively controlled things, sort of like automatic continuous motion, like, say, walking, just walking, some of that doesn't come directly from the brain but is controlled by central locomotion function. Like there is a cluster of nervous tissue in the spinal cord that says, legs, keep walking unless something goes wrong. Now, the other thing that potentially gets called a sacrolumbar expansion, this cavity, is a real expansion, a cavity in the sacral vertebrae, or it's kind of a gap in the bones back there. But it's not unique to the Stegosaurus, and paleontologists are pretty confident that it was not the site of a brain, but actually the site of a glycogen body, which is a mass of glucose energy storage, which is still seen around the same location in bird skeletons today. And of course, birds are the descendants of the dinosaurs that had them.
Yeah, I was reading about this theory. This was actually in an older dinosaur text from the 1980s, so I'm not sure to what extent this holds up. But one possible interpretation was that this could have given the hindquarters an energy boost when it was, I guess, clobbering time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, that is one thing to consider. I guess people don't know for sure yet. I mean, in the most recent stuff I've read, people don't know for sure what the glycogen body is for, even in modern birds. But interesting mystery. Another side note, if this discredited hypothesis had been true, like if there were a second brain in the Stegosaurus butt, what would the consciousness of an organism like that be like? If it was capable of being conscious, what would the consciousness of an organism with two separate brains connected by a single nervous system be like?
Would it be a brain that has not two houses but three? Would you have a tricameral mind?
I don't know.
Yeah?
No, I mean, like, could you – I mean, imagine it for a second. Would it be that you'd have two minds in the same body, or would somehow one mind be split across the two different brains connected by nervous tissue?
I guess I would tend towards the second, but I also can't help but think about some of – I mean, I can't help but think about Julian James and the bicameral mind mm-hmm. interpretation, where you have one half speaking to the other.
Yeah.
And it's – yeah, so I kind of jokingly mentioned the idea of a tricameral mind, but yeah, it's one can't help but wonder, like, how would communication among these three regions of cognition, how would they be experienced as – conscious thought? And of course, it's ridiculous. We're talking about this with a stegosaurus,
right?
Which is
we're multiple levels of speculation
pretty far from modern consciousness. This creature, but no, it's a fascinating idea. It also makes me think of the various models of chakra in Eastern and New Age thought,
mm-hmm.
the idea that you have these different centers of cognition throughout the body.
Oh, there's one. There's a sacral energy. One, right?
Yeah, yeah. So maybe it would sort of be like that.
Huh.
I mean, I can't help but summon that idea when I'm trying to imagine a brain in the butt.
Okay, let's get back to the tail.
Yes. Yeah, I mean we're headed that way anyway. We're talking about the idea of a rear brain. Let's just head on all the way back to the thagomizer, because here's a fun question that I don't think I'd really thought about this before, but it's a pretty natural question to ask. Why don't modern vertebrates have weaponized tails like we see with the stegosaurians or with the ankylosaurus? You know, the other kind of famous armored dinosaur.
It's got kind of a ball tail, right?
Yeah, kind of like very blunt-looking spikes, but yeah, very much this enormous, like, dwarven warhammer of a tail.
Even more Conan-y, maybe.
Yeah, and then among mammals, prehistoric mammals, you had the glyphodonts, which also had a weaponized tail.
Oh, yeah? So you're saying, like, where are all the thagomizers today?
Yeah, yeah, because you look around at our modern vertebrate organisms, and you just do not see them. So a 2018 North Carolina State University study actually looked into this because think about it. We have all of these creatures that have horns on their head, antlers on their head, and they're going around using these either offensively in some sort of a mating behavior against uh-huh. other males, or they're using them defensively against predators. But that's up there where the brain is.
Exactly.
Like, that's the most pivotal part of the organism. Why are they fighting with that?
For a while now, I've been wanting to do a whole episode on this question of weaponized heads and why you would have so commonly evolved weaponized heads. You're putting the most important part of your body right out front as a weapon.
Yeah, yeah. Why not use the tail? The tail that is, you know, in many organisms, this is a part that can be lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's a part that is brightly colored or otherwise ornamented so that it'll attract the attention of predators and not the front end, not the business end of the organism.
Yeah. So what's the deal here?
Well, it's indeed a topic we could probably go into in more depth. But in this case, the researchers, they looked for commonality among weapon-tailed, four-legged organisms, both living and extinct. And their guiding question was simply, like, why don't turtles have spiked tails?
Okay.
You know, they're big armored creatures in many cases. Why mm-hmm. is there no – they have tails. Why are there no spikes back there?
Right.
Well, they determined that these are the necessary factors – that you need in place for weaponized tails to emerge.
Okay.
First of all, they said you need to be at least 200 pounds or 100 kilograms in weight.
Okay.
And next, you need to be armored and boast a thoracic stiffness enough to swing the tail and counteract the swing force. So
oh,
no
I see.
Windmilling, you know? The
right.
Stegosaurus is not going to just spin in circles. It needs to be able to move it around back and forth or at least to strike and recoil.
Right, you can't have like a, you know, a 10-foot long arm to hit somebody with, right? Because you wouldn't be able to control it.
Right. Yeah, you need like a base of operations there,
yeah.
right? And then finally, you need to be an herbivore. And the reality is that large armored herbivores are rare, and additional head or tail ornamentation is generally an energy expenditure beyond what natural selection will support.
Mm-hmm.
So they describe the tails of beasts like the stegosaurus as being kind of a perfect storm of traits.
Yeah.
So, which makes them all the more special, you know, that you realize in this vast history of varied organisms and varied defensive forms, the stegosaurians, the glyphodonts, and ankylosaurus, they have something special going on.
Totally. The stegosaurs are beautiful, fascinating creatures to study. But now that we've taken a look at them, by Crom, I think it's about time to get back into the claim that somebody saw a living stegosaurus and carved it into a temple in Cambodia. So let's go to this claim. What's up with it? What's going on?
Well, what should we do first, Joe? Should we talk about the carving itself, or should we talk about the location of the carving?
Well, let's set the scene first, and then we'll talk about the carving.
Okay. All right. Well, so the place is a temple complex known as Ta Prom. This is the place where allegedly we find a carving of a stegosaurus. So it's a temple in modern-day Cambodia. It's a relic of the Khmer Empire and located in its then capital of Angkor. Now, the Khmer Empire lasted from roughly the 9th to the 15th century CE, and it ruled the entire Mekong River Valley, but then ultimately declined, as empires tend to do.
Right.
And there are a number of different attributed reasons. As with the fall of any empire, it's a complex thing, but historians and anthropologists can't help but tease various possibilities apart, right?
Yeah.
So one idea is that, you know, you simply had Thai conquest going on that whittled them down. Or one idea that's particularly engaging is the idea that widespread religious conversion kind of destabilized things to some extent.
Oh, do you know what the conversion from what to what would have been?
It would have been Hinduism to Buddhism, particularly to Theravada Buddhism.
Ah.
For instance, one idea here is that under Hinduism, the rulers of the Khmer Empire were divine kings or Devaraja. But with the conversion to Theravada Buddhism, they became more mortal.
Mm.
But ultimately, there are a lot of factors to consider here.
Yeah, that can undercut your divine right, huh?
Yeah, it takes me back a little to our episode on the divine rule of kings and what happens when they've outlived their usefulness.
Oh, yeah, ritual regicide.
Yeah, yeah. But ultimately, there are a number of factors to consider here, including like maritime trade. I saw that come up in some papers, including a paper by anthropologist Miriam T. Stark, who also points out that Cambodia's ancient history is among the least known of Southeast Asia. And this is due to a number of factors, including civil war and just an increasingly like colonial tradition of attempting to understand the history of another people.
But as comparatively little as we might know about it, they certainly did leave behind some amazing and beautiful relics of the civilization.
Oh yeah, without doubt. Now I've never been to Cambodia, but I want to because I've seen images and I've heard about the famous temple complex of Angkor Wat.
Yeah, you've probably seen pictures of this.
Oh yeah, yeah. These are beautiful to behold. It's the nation's most popular tourist destination. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, as is Ta Prom. Now, these temple complexes, they would have been Hindu temples originally, and they gradually became more Buddhist in function as this massive conversion took place within the Khmer Empire.
When was Ta Prom built?
So this would have been built in 1186 by King Jayavarman VII. And sadly, I have to say it's also known today as the Tomb Raider Temple.
Oh, no.
Because it was used as a location for the 2001 film Tomb Raider.
The 2001 film. Wait, which one? Was that the original one with Angelina Jolie?
The original Angelina Jolie.
Saw it in the theater. Don't remember anything about it.
I looked back at the IMDb list for it, and it has like a number of famous actors in it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Isn't John Voight in it? Is that right?
God, was he? I don't know. I don't know about John Voight, but he's Angelina Jolie's father, so maybe he was in it. But Daniel Craig was in it, I believe.
No way.
Yeah, pre-James Bond.
Oh, I just looked it up. You know who it has in it?
Who?
It's got Ian Glenn, the guy who plays Jorah Mormont on Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. And I believe it also has, what's his name, Noah Taylor, yes. He was another actor who was on Game of Thrones and has been in a number of other interesting films over the years. And it all goes back to Tomb Raider. Thank you, Tomb Raider.
All right, let's not turn this into Tomb Raider to blow your mind. So the temple.
Yes, yes. So I found a nice write-up on Lonely Planet about Ta Prom. I just want to read one paragraph from it that nicely sets the stage. Quote, Top Ram is a temple of towers, closed courtyards, and narrow corridors. Many of the corridors are impassable, clogged with jumbled piles of delicately carved stone blocks dislodged by the roots of long decayed trees. Bas-reliefs on bulging walls are carpeted with lichen, moss, and creeping plants, and shrubs sprout from the roofs of monumental porches. Trees hundreds of years old tower overhead, their leaves filtering the sunlight and casting a greenish pall over the whole scene.
Well, that's beautifully described.
Yeah.
It makes me want to go there. But I'm susceptible to this kind of setting anyway, and I think a lot of people are, right? Like it keeps showing up in our adventure movies and video games and all that. I wonder why we so love the image of the overgrown jungle temple with crumbling ancient stone archways being consumed by tree roots and vines. It's a singularly beautiful kind of image and setting for some reason.
Well, I can't help but think there are a number of different things going on. So the more pessimistic side of me tends to think that part of it is kind of like a colonial, like pulp-saturated notion of the noble Westerner walking among the ruins of fallen ancient cultures.
Well, you could maybe see something like that, but I think it's equally true of ruins no matter what culture they're from, right?
I mean,
you can imagine it's equally true of old cathedral ruins in Western Europe.
Yeah, or just old supermarket ruins here in the States. Anywhere I go that I see some sort of ruins, be they ancient or fairly recent, they're fascinating. I want to walk inside them and see what's there and or what's living inside.
It's specifically the idea of the plant overgrowth of like a sacred stone building.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the main elements that are featuring in my picture of this in the mind. I guess maybe it's just something about maybe it indicates the folly of human projects. I don't know.
Yeah, well, there is kind of like a memento mori aspect to it, right? This sort of Ozymandias effect that no matter how great the structure, it is going to fall with time. Nature is going to going to flow over it and take it back.
Yeah.
And there's something like beautiful and haunting and poignant about all of that.
Yeah. It's like watching human-built structures become a part of the forest.
Yeah. But then also, I mean, I am fascinated by other cultures, and many of them are ancient cultures. And therefore, to visit a site like this or even just look at photographs of it, it's kind of like going back in time. But how far back in time?
That's a good question. Okay, well, there's not really a question about when the temple is from. It seems, it's less than 1,000 years old, right?
Right.
So being less than 1,000 years old, I think it's about 800 years old or so. What is the argument that someone has carved a stegosaurus into the temple as a decorative motif?
And I'll remind everybody here that you can see the image we're talking about at stufftoblowyourmind.com on the landing page for this episode. It's going to be the central image for the episode, the carving of the supposed stegosaurus.
Right. So there's a building. It's got a pillar, or sort of like a pillar against a wall, and there are carvings all up and down the vertical length of the pillar where there are sort of like these abstract lines snaking around, framing obviously representative carvings that are supposed to be animals and mythological beasts.
Yes. And one of these, when you look at it, it's kind of it's inside of a circle, or at least a curved decorative flourish here, and it appears to be a quadruped. It has a long tail. And it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Five or six, I think.
Yeah, maybe six, perhaps bony plates on its back.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like a stegosaurian. And you could even go as far to say that, yeah, it looks like it could be one of the, I think, three varieties of stegosaurians that have been found in modern China.
Uh-huh.
So, you don't even have to say, well, how did they get over from North America? Well, there are fossil remains of stegosaurians from generally that part of Asia, though I would also add that it feels a bit silly to attempt to match up a supposed dinosaur that would have evolved from these forms across 150 million years or so. But still, you have to admit, when you look at it, you can say, well, that kind of looks like a stegosaurus. I don't buy it for a second, but I have to admit that looking at it and imagining it as a stegosaurus is kind of intriguing.
So I was trying to understand the argument that this is a stegosaurus. I found an article on a creationist website called Answers in Genesis.
You got
to keep an eye out for this one, because actually when you start Googling like evolutionary science topics, somehow this website very often tends to make it near the top of Google results.
Oh, yeah. It'll pop up. Maybe you're searching, should I mouthwash before I brush my teeth or afterwards? And then the answers, you're getting an answer and like, oh, it's Answers in Genesis. Maybe I shouldn't trust this.
Yeah, they've got some good SEO game going, whatever it is. So they get up in those Google results. But yeah, this is a young earth creationist website that is going to peddle a whole lot of pseudoscience about geology and paleontology. And they've got an article attributed to a writer named Kenneth Cole, MD, that is defending the idea that this is evidence of a young Earth, like a recent creation and humans and dinosaurs living at the same time. So Cole writes, quote, "There are no mythological figures among the roundels, so one can reasonably conclude that these figures depict the animals that were commonly seen by the ancient Khmer people in the 12th century. That means that only a little over 800 years ago, some dinosaurs were likely still living in that region of Cambodia. Of course, this is no surprise to biblical creationists, because we know from Genesis 1 that land animals such as dinosaurs and humans were living together in the beginning, and that representatives of the land animals, e.g. dinosaurs, were saved on the ark to repopulate the earth after the flood only 4,300 years ago." No, I don't want to give in to excessive, unnecessary mockery, but I think this is not a tenable position. And we can explore some of the reasons for that when we come back from a break.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. So, Joe, you just read this this passage from this young Earth creationist about Noah's Ark and the Stegosaurians aboard the vessel.
Yeah, I would say that this actually represents one way you could take if you're going to go with the line that this carving in this Cambodian temple is actually a depiction of a Stegosaurus. There are a couple ways you could go with it, but you got to start with the idea that there's an obvious problem here. The carving is less than 1,000 years old. We mentioned earlier that all non-avian dinosaurs went extinct 66 million years ago or before that. Well, for the Stegosaurus, the problem is even worse because it's one of those that went extinct long before the KPG extinction event took place. So the Stegosaurus genus apparently went extinct during the late Jurassic period, roughly 150 million years ago. And by the time of the KPG extinction, Stegosaurus had already been extinct for almost 100 million years. So a way of putting this I've seen quoted before is that more time separates the Stegosaurus from the Tyrannosaurus rex than separates the Tyrannosaurus rex from us.
Wow. So we're talking just vast lengths of time that are almost incomprehensible for us meager humans.
Right. Now, if you want to say it wasn't a Stegosaurus, but it was a related Stegosaurian, right, some other type of related Ornithischian herbivore with plates on its back of some kind from the group Stegosauria, that may have existed a little bit later, maybe into the early or maybe middle Cretaceous. But even those probably didn't make it to the KPG event, which in any case wiped out all of the dinosaurs except the ones that became modern-day birds. So if you want to believe that it really is a live Stegosaurus that somebody saw being depicted in the carving, and that the carving is original, of course, there's another idea that, of course, well, what if it's a more recent hoax or something? Then I think there are really two main ways people could go. You could either say some Stegosaurus managed to survive about 150 million years longer than we thought without leaving any fossil evidence in the meantime, and we can call the believers of this hypothesis the cryptid camp, right? This is the standard cryptozoology kind of thing. There's some isolated population of an otherwise unknown creature.
Right. Yeah, that we haven't explored every nook and cranny of the Earth, and it's in those nooks and crannies that we might find fabulous or henceforth unrecognized species.
The other one is what we heard from Kenneth Cole, MD, which is the entire timeline of Earth history is wrong. The Earth is actually less than 10,000 years old, and dinosaurs existed alongside most of human civilization throughout history. We can call this the young Earth creationist camp.
And I have theological problems with that because I think God would have destroyed all the crooked hot dog brain dinosaurs with the flood, and then they would not have been permitted to board the Ark. But that's my tangent.
Leave your theology aside, Robert. I won't hear of it. So I think we can say probably neither of these is plausible at all. But the creationist hypothesis actually has more problems going for it than the cryptid hypothesis.
Yeah, the cryptid hypothesis at least does not require us to bend and break time.
Yeah. Before we get into those, I would say we don't really need to debate the visual qualities of the image because even if it looked exactly like a Stegosaurus, this would not be a reason to think that humans and dinosaurs existed at the same time. But I must point out it does not look exactly like a Stegosaurus. I mean, if you look at it, you might say, oh, that's a Stegosaurus because you'd recognize the plates, right? Stegosaurus had a very small cranium with no known adornments, and this creature in the carving has a huge head with the appearance of some kind of pointed ear or horn on its face. I don't know exactly what it's supposed to be, but there's a thing on the face, and the head is very large.
Right.
Stegosaurus also has a huge tail with spikes, and this carving has a pretty small tail with no spikes. So to be clear, what I'm saying is that nothing about it looks like a Stegosaurus except that it has four legs and appears to have these lumps positioned over its back.
And these lumps, by the way, might not even be parts of the animal. There's a strong argument that these are perhaps supposed to be leaves or some other vegetative detail in the background.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, if you look at some of the same carvings from this area of the temple, other animals are depicted with sort of like shapes in the background that I think are just sort of like supposed to be background foliage or something.
Now, here's another problem that I have with it. If a Stegosaurus or some Stegosaurian creature were to have survived to the point where humans either saw it or just remembered it, they just had like an oral history of the Stegosaurians, mm-hmm. and it made their way made its way into their art. Why would this be the lone example of it?
Oh, yeah.
Why would there not be Stegosaurians everywhere?
Right. Where are all the other ones?
Exactly. And then also, if you're going to look at fantastic creatures in art from that region, then what about the Naga, the seven-headed serpent that you see in various Southeast Asian traditions?
Right. I mean, so you're saying, like, why... why don't we assume that maybe that's based on a real animal they saw too?
Yeah, they're really cherry-picking a particular beast or fantastic beast and then saying it is real. When they're if you're going to let that one through the gates, then you have to let the Naga, you have to let every fantastic creature from Hindu and Buddhist traditions in through the gates as well. It's only fair. Let them on the ark too.
Well, that's a good point. I think a supporter could say the it's a Stegosaurus argument it's got going for it that a Stegosaurus did exist at some point, mm-hmm. and we don't have evidence that the Naga ever existed. But we don't have evidence that the Naga ever existed because, nobody's ever said they saw one and there's no fossil evidence. With the Stegosaurus, nobody's ever said that they've seen one in any kind of credible way, and there's no fossil evidence since 150 million mm-hmm. years ago or whenever the particular genus you're talking about went extinct.
Right.
So within the period of the past dozens of millions of years, actually the evidential issue is the same for the Naga and the Stegosaurus.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we have no doubt that there were sightings of course, boars and the Javan rhino, which we discussed in depth in our rhino horn episode. The Javan rhino is at least if you're used to just seeing the African varieties of rhino, it is a weird-looking rhino.
Yeah.
And it looks a lot like the creature in this carving.
Well, yeah, the creature in the carving, it's got something strange going on its face that looks like it could be an ear or a horn or something.
Yeah.
And I'm inclined to think that, yeah, that could be some kind of rhino horn.
Yeah. So, and these, again, are real beasts. It's just that there are far fewer leaps and bounds one has to make in logic to get there.
And even if you were to ignore all the stuff we're saying, this would only go to support the cryptid argument that somehow this small population of stegosaurs or related stegosaurids managed to survive undetected until at least 800 years ago or so, leaving no other traces that we've ever found. If I'm being generous, the cryptid argument seems at best physically possible, but just really implausible. Like, I don't see any good reason to prefer it over a handful of rival explanations you could come up with, which include, for example, the carving is supposed to be a boar or a rhino, like we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. Maybe the carving is a mythological beast of the imagination that has a superficial resemblance to something with back plates. And if you just look on the pillar in the temple, if you look just like two spaces down, there's another crazy-looking mythological beast that's pretty cool and it's got all kinds of features that you don't see in nature.
Yeah, this looks like some sort of a cross between the Lorax and the monsters from Where the Wild Things Are.
Well, it sort of looks like it's like a fawn, but it's wearing like a magistrate's wig.
Mm-hmm. And nobody's making the argument that this was a real creature that I have seen.
No, but give them time. So another possibility, I don't know that there's any evidence to support this, but then again, it's probably more plausible than a cryptid thing, is that the carving is a more recent forgery. I'm not advocating that, but of course it's possible.
Yeah, I think I did see it brought up, the idea that, oh, what if a film crew did it? Western yeah. film crew comes in and maybe they fake a Stegosaurus on ancient ruins, which seems like that would be an extreme and a reckless thing for anyone to do. So yeah. I don't know how much credence I give to that idea, personally.
I don't see any evidence for it at all, except to say that it would be a less extravagant thing yes. to resort to than saying that Stegosauruses survived an extra 100 million years.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and we haven't even mentioned this yet, geomythology.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you haven't heard our episode, The Mystery of the Myth-Fleshed Fossil, we discuss the work of the Stanford historian Adrian Mayer, who has written books documenting many possible cases where ancient art, mythology, folk beliefs could have been inspired by ancient peoples coming across confusing geofacts like fossils of dinosaurs and other amazing extinct animals. So you find a dinosaur fossil, you're in the ancient world, it looks like nothing you've ever seen alive today, so maybe it's some sort of monster, it's a griffin, it's a dragon, it's mm-hmm. a cyclops, and so forth. And so some ancient stegosaurians, not the Stegosaurus itself, but related back-plated ornithischian herbivores, did live in this area around China, as you've pointed out.
Right. Yeah, at least three different stegosaurians.
So there's no way to rule out that this kind of carving could also have been inspired by somebody finding a mysterious stegosaurian fossil skeleton with back plates, passing that morphology on through art and folklore, and it ending up getting carved into a temple wall.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're digging up a lot of stone to build a giant temple complex.
Oh, yeah. Now, we don't know which of these is correct, but any of them seem more plausible than huge land-dwelling dinosaurs surviving millions of years after we have any fossil records of them. So I think the cryptid approach kind of falls apart.
Yes. Plus, I have to think that if dinosaurs were around during the Roman Empire, they would have wound up in the Colosseum. There would have been a Stegosaurus in the Colosseum battling a gladiator.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you go back into the age of emperors and kings and all that. I mean, they really did love to get some exotic animals into their menagerie, yeah, and trot them around for people to see, right?
Yeah, there are countless tales. We could do a whole episode on examples of exotic creatures that were transported across continents so that royal individuals could look at them and, you know, maybe have them fight another beast.
Now, that's all the cryptid approach. I think, unfortunately, the argument gets a lot worse if you try to take the young Earth approach, because the idea that the humans saw stegosaurs because dinosaurs actually existed alongside humans for much of history, and that history is less than 10,000 years long, I have to say, sometimes I think people in the skeptic community have too much fun harping on the wrongness of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it can... Yeah, there are lots of people who have deeply untenable views, like the idea of a young Earth, but it can feel excessive and unnecessary to just like keep harping on how wrong that is. But at the same time, I do feel a kind of sadness about all of the energy that goes into defending views like that, because it's similar to like the energy that would go into defending a flat Earth approach. It's something that is not just disagreeing with the majority of scientists about a fact here or a fact there, but it's sort of undermining the integrity of the entire scientific enterprise. If you take a position like flat Earth or like young Earth, you are forced by extension to essentially deny everything.
Yeah. I mean, one way that I think about it is I will sadly never see a living Stegosaurus.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the Stegosaurus was real, and yeah, that is fascinating, and it's amazing, and it fills me with wonder and awe to research the creature and read about it and see these artistic depictions of it. Likewise, I will never see a unicorn, and unicorns never existed. And yet the unicorn, images of the unicorn are beautiful. And when you start reading about the complex symbolism of the unicorn, that is beautiful. And it can bring meaning to your life. And there's no need to start bending your reality and bending your understanding of the world so that you can make it somehow more real than it is, yeah, as if the idea of it and the potency of the idea is not real.
Exactly. I mean, is it really worth believing in the physical existence of a unicorn to make you essentially forced to undermine the foundations of astronomy, cosmology, astrophysics, geology, radiochemistry, biology, paleontology, genetics? I mean, all of these fields are based on predictions and consistently produce results that are in agreement, basically, with a picture of an old Earth and an old universe. And all of these fields not only have successful predictive theories corroborating the old universe, the old Earth, hundreds of millions of years of animal evolution, but they independently produce new results and overturn old misconceptions that keep further resolving the clarity of that picture rather than undermining it. And of course, you know, as we all know, some of these fields use that picture of the world to produce technologies that even Cambodian stegosaur advocates use in their daily lives.
Yeah, you end up just having to do so much mental gymnastics to make it work. And you know who didn't have time for mental gymnastics? Stegosaurus.
The Stegosaurus was a plain dealer.
Yeah, yeah. If it's green, eat it. If it tries to bite you, stab it in the groin with the Thagomizer.
Yeah, Thagomize it good. By Crom.
All right. Well, there you go. Hopefully this episode, it provided us an excuse to just talk about the Stegosaurus for quite a while. And we got to discuss some of these other issues related to cryptozoology, young earth creationism, and just a little bit of Cambodian history. Again, you can find the key images that we're talking about here at stufftoblowyourmind.com on the landing page for this episode. You'll also find blog posts and links out to our various social media accounts, such as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc.
Huge thanks, as always, to our wonderful audio producers, Alex Williams and Tari Harrison. If you would like to get in touch with us to let us know feedback about this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, to just say hi, let us know who you are and why you like the show, you can always email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.